Hello, this is Peter Fisher, and this is episode 2 of the General Wind Podcasts. And today is October 3rd, 2006. So at this point, you should have been studying for a half hour each day over the past week. So you should be starting to get a sense of what you're doing and what you have ahead of you. What I'd like to talk to you about today is outlining. So one reason I do these podcasts is, number one, I enjoy them. Number two is to reduce stress. And how do you reduce stress? Well, for general one, probably what a lot of you are worried about is that you're not going to know something. You're not going to know how to do a problem because you don't know the physics. The way to reduce stress is to create a system by which you're going to capture everything you need to know about physics to pass General 1. And you're not going to be stressed because you know that this system is going to identify any lacuna in your knowledge of physics. But in order to do this, you need a system. And a key part of the system is the half hour a day, which you should be doing. And the second part, which we'll talk about today, is outlining. So all of you have had 4 years of physics, or more. Some of you have had graduate courses. And so you already know a lot. But one course that you never really have is just a course in how it all fits together. And that's one thing that you need for General 1, because General 1 is about all five of the major topics that we discussed last time. So what you have to do is kind of synthesize all of your knowledge. You have to get it all collected in one place so that you can see what it is that you really don't know and what you need to study. So the next step is either to take a week, and that's preferred, 5 study sessions, 5 of the 7 study sessions in a week, or 1 session a week for the next 5 weeks, and make an outline of one of the major topics. So, for example, in half an hour, you should make a level 2 outline of mechanics. So level 2 means that there's 2 levels of hierarchy below the topic of mechanics. So, for example, in mechanics, you might have the basic mechanics, F equals MA sort of stuff, Hamiltonian formulation, Lagrangian formulation, angular momentum, things at that level. And then underneath each one of those, you're going to identify probably between 5 and 10 subtopics. So, for example, underneath angular momentum, you'll have calculating moments of inertia, symmetric top, asymmetric top, things at that level. A good way to start this is either get your notes, which is really the best thing to study from if you still have them from your undergraduate time, or get a book and go through the table of contents and go through the book itself. Look at each page and try to make a level 2 outline of what the contents of the book. And in looking at each page, flag things that you don't know that you think you need to know for General 1. The interesting thing I think you'll come to realize as you do this is that you actually know a lot more than you think you know. So there's a big component of this that's just dredging up stuff that you already know because you spent 4 years studying it. Now, another important aspect to this is that you'll begin to recognize connections, because a lot of the things we test on in General 1 are connections. So once you have five outlines, you can look at them and you can begin to see, for example, that optics is really an application of the propagation of electromagnetic waves through ponderable media. So even though optics is really a distinct area, which is, you know, really ray tracing and lenses and things like that, it connects pretty strongly with electricity and magnetism. Or, for example, the quantum mechanic formulation of the emission of radiation is grounded in classical E&M, the interaction of charged particles and currents. And as you progress, you will begin to see this more and more and sort of develop a view of interconnections in physics. So once you have the outlines, as you go studying more deeply into things and working problems, if you keep them handy, what you can do is when you have a question, when you have a problem that you can't solve, you can find what part in the outline that you need to look at and mark that down, and then slowly add to your outlines. Now, when you make the outline, you shouldn't just, you know, copy the table of contents of you know, your favorite mechanics book. That's really not the point. What you want to do is go through the mechanics book and arrange the topics the way you understand them. And to do this, it's usually worth looking in a couple of different books. Now, the topic of books is interesting. I think at the end of the day, you'll probably have about 10 books that you are going to study from. And I think you want to keep the number of books that you're referencing fairly small so that you really get to know them. When you find something that you don't understand, it's better to be able to go to a book that maybe doesn't have the best treatment, but has the treatment that you know, that you learned, that you understand most clearly. I was thinking the other day about what books I would have now. And so for mechanics, I'd have probably either Scheck or Landau or Marion. For electricity and magnetism, there are really only two books, Purcell and Jackson. Thermodynamics is covered in Papard, which is a fabulous little book. Statistical physics would be Cattell and Cromer, which is another very, very good book. I'd avoid the book by Reif. Quantum mechanics would be Griffiths and Schiff, which is an old book, but you can get it on eBay or from Amazon. Relativity is kind of a problem. There's a very good book by Tony French from MIT, and the first edition of Space-Time Physics by Taylor and Wheeler is very good. So I actually, if you don't know a good book, I'd recommend those. Those are all solid books. You know, most of them more advanced than what we really expect from General 1, but you should get to know them. So I know this is kind of a weird thing to suggest doing, but I do think it's a valuable way to spend a little bit of time right now, right in the beginning, kind of making a big roadmap of physics the way you understand it. So one thing I wanted to do in this podcast is mention things of interest that I find. I read science and nature pretty much religiously each week. I don't read every article, you know, because most of it is biology and chemistry and things that I don't really understand. But as far as, you know, keeping up with DISH, that's really important because that's pretty well covered in both of those. But they're also kind of little surprising things, and I found one in the September 14th edition of nature. Oh, by the way, if you know, probably most of you don't have the $300 it takes to subscribe to both nature and science. You don't have to worry about that. MIT has online subscriptions that you get by virtue of your affiliation with MIT. They both have real simple syndication feeds, which is nice, so that you can just scroll through them if you use an aggregator each week or each day. They both have podcasts, so if you're listening to this, you know something about podcasts and can just subscribe to their podcasts. Anyway, the September 14th edition of Nature has an article about an experiment called clouds. I have a friend, Jasper Kirkby, that I worked with at CERN. Jasper is a pretty well-known particle physicist, an experimental particle physicist. He's very bright, energetic. He's kind of a nut. And along about 94, 95, for whatever reason, he was thinking about global warming. And he came across some studies that had been done that correlated global warming with fractional coverage of the Earth on average by clouds, and found that this correlated with cosmic rays from the sun, which is related to solar activity. So, as most of you know, the sun follows a 11-year solar cycle and several much longer cycles. And so Jasper dug into this, and he found out that at least in his view, there was a lot of evidence that what we call global warming is really not just CO2 emission, but really due to this cosmic ray stuff. So being an experimentalist and being at CERN, where there are lots of charged particle beams, he set about designing a chamber in which you could make clouds, and then you could put particle beams through them and study the way particle beams induced nucleation, which led to the formation of clouds. And along the way, he kind of picked up this view that this is really the cause of global warming, although he really wanted to do the experiment to find out. Of course, CERN wouldn't touch this with a 10-foot pole, and you know, the real global warming people who believe it's due to man's activity started jumping up and down. But in this issue of Nature, there's a big article, 3 pages, about his experiment and how it's going ahead. They're going to run at the CERN Proton Synchrotron in 2010, and they've got about $10 million to build this thing. So I thought that was pretty interesting. But the other thing is that, you know, just by nature, I tend to believe what other scientists say, and the climatologists, I think, are pretty much saying with one voice that global warming is really due to CO2 from man's activities in the atmosphere. And this, seeing this article, led me to reflect, well, like, why do I really believe that? I mean, these guys are scientists and they're reputable, but how do I know there aren't significant voices of dissent inside the community of climatologists like Jasper that are just kind of being ignored, if not actively suppressed, by these guys? It could be. You have to develop your own view. I certainly, you know, I live in Cambridge, 3 blocks from MIT, so I don't have to drive, and I ride a bicycle everywhere I can, and that's not going to change. And I think we can all work to save CO2 going into the atmosphere. But it's interesting to reflect on, you know, why you believe some of the things you do. So here's a little problem for you to work on. This is a mechanics problem. Suppose you have 4 masses, all of which are equal, and they're arranged at the corner of a square, and the plane of the square lies horizontally. Each mass is connected above a surface by a spring of constant K. All the springs have the same spring constant. the masses are constrained so that they can only move up or down. So it's sort of like a table. Instead of legs, it's got springs. So find the eigenmodes of this object. The first thing you should think about is how many degrees of freedom there are. Once you've found the eigenmodes, find all of the eigenfrequencies. Then, just for exercise, consider different regular shapes. For example, suppose you had an equilateral triangle instead of the square, or a pentagon. What would the eigenmodes be, and what would the eigenfrequencies be? Think about this problem carefully. You can do it by writing down a Hamiltonian or Lagrangian, or using F equals MA. Or you can really do this problem just by thinking carefully about it. This is going to be important on the exam, where you won't have a lot of time, and you always want to start by thinking carefully about a problem before launching into a lot of detailed calculation. So that's it for episode 2, Outlines. Next week we'll talk about numbers, and a relatively painless way to memorize all the constants you'll need for rapid numerical evaluation. As usual, I'd like to thank Sheila Marston-Holsor and her husband John, and Bonna Newman from PhysRefs, who makes possible posting all of this, and Sean Thompson for helping us get the data files here and there. And that's it. Until next week, have a good week. And remember, keep up with half an hour each day. Thank you.